Today's talk is given by David Henderson, Managing Director of OSGB. His talk is entitled Beyond GB and GEO, National Mapping and Transformation. David Henderson is Ordnance Survey's Managing Director for all aspects of OS's relationship with government and the delivery of OS's public tasks. He has responsibility for Ordnance Survey's participation in market innovation programmes and is the executive sponsor for the much respected GeoVision programme and also the Open Data programme he's involved with. David joined Ordnance Survey in 2003 and has 25 years of geospatial industry experience across a variety of technical and leadership roles. He's been part of the OS executive team since 2015, and he's a member of the management board of Eurogeographics, leads the UK delegation to the UN's Committee of Experts on Global Geographic Information Management, UNGGIM, and since 2015 has also been our external examiner here for our very own GIS-NSC programmes. David also remains an active member of the UK's Association for Geographic Information, of which he was chair of council in 2015 and 2016. So, clearly, we couldn't have a better speaker to guide us the world of GI and from the OS perspective. Thus, without any further delay, let me present David Henderson.
Thank you, Mark. Very good. Delighted to be back in Edinburgh this afternoon, reunited with the original Iron Brew. I was desperately worried that it's about to change, get it now, it's looking good. And it's been lovely to spend a couple of days in the city. This month is a really important month. You know, I'm running every day in January for Charity. I don't know if you heard Red January run every day. I've been up Arthur's Seat and Blackford Hill first thing this morning to reunite with the hilly areas of Edinburgh rather than the flats of Hampshire. So it's been a real pleasure to be back. Next time you ask me for a bio, then tell me you're going to read it out as well, and I'll give you a short one. it's cringeable when you hear that going. So listen, there's a lot going on in national mapping agencies, not just here in the UK, but internationally these days, and several of you in the audience will be very familiar with that and have your own perspectives on that, I'm sure, which might lead to some lively debate at the end of this. I've just said to a couple of people, these slides may hold some surprises this afternoon, not least for me, because I had a bit of a system problem about 2 hours ago, so I think I've put it back together again, but there is the rest of the old holiday picture. Them where it shouldn't stop. We'll gloss over those quickly if we find that is the case. But what I thought I'd do this afternoon is try and navigate through some of the landscapes that we are facing at Ordnance Survey, how we are being impacted, I guess, by some of the transformational changes in the world today. The world of geospatial is long since stopped being a domestic agenda. It's something that we're part of a big planet. Geospatial infrastructures are global infrastructures today in one shape or form, whether that's from a capture perspective, a sharing perspective, or an analysis perspective. These things are happening on global scale today, and any domestic environment like our own has to be part of those global developments. The other part of it is Britain is changing fast today, and the digitalisation of the world is impacting Britain. Britain seeks to be a leading digital economy, and many of the things that will be at the forefront of British technology going forward are data related, and geospatial is at the core of that. So I guess what I'll try and do is walk through a number of those perspectives as to how we see them, and then share a number of case studies and developments that we're working through to perhaps reflect those changes in a geospatial sense. And hopefully we'll get there within the hour. We're going to do this without walking around too much. So today, obviously, we're a well-served geospatial economy here in Britain. Over the last 10 years, there are very few parts of government, very few parts of modern business that are not using geospatial as part of their data infrastructures. And I think there are many organisations who have served that cause, whether it's the global providers, national mapping providers, and the business partners that sit around the ecosystem here in the UK. We're very fortunate to be part of one of the world's most highly developed domestic geospatial infrastructures. There are many, many use cases that are underpinned by this, and I think this slide really just kind of covers that. Well, it does a little bit more than just simply a government perspective, but I think it is interesting at the moment as to how interested government has become in geospatial infrastructure, recognising that as we embrace data, we'll come back to this as we're going through just data more generally, the real recognition within government that geospatial data is a fundamental component of that national infrastructure. And today there are very few applications that are kind of core to the running of a nation, the development of an economy, the delivery of public services, the development of better policy, that are not benefiting in some shape or form from geospatial activities. But the world has been changing. It has changed, it's irrevocably changed. Many of those changes are generally for the best, for the better, and there are some real challenges that are impacting on us today. Whether those are socially driven, whether those are economically driven, and certainly in our world today, the advent of technological change is absolutely paramount. Now, we can look at those through two lenses. We try and look at it through a glass that's always half full. And the opportunity that's being presented through those changes are really significant for ourselves as a geospatial community, but certainly ourselves as a geospatial agency within that environment. I always use this slide with a degree of trepidation. I don't like, actually, the phrase that talks about data and geospatial being some sort of oil as a commodity. You tend to use oil. When it's gone, it's gone. Data is something which you invest in, you curate, you want to maintain it. It's an asset which loses. But I think there's two really interesting components that are worth considering. On one level, it's fantastic to recognise the significance of data as part of or something as important as oil. You know, without oil, we can't run motor cars, we can't manufacture, we can't, etc. Data to be recognised by the likes of The Economist and other leading commentators as that important is really, really significant. The other part of it is just recognising within our own governmental review. So a number of folk looked at Ordnance Survey. There was a general review around about 18 months ago, which is government's mechanism for reviewing the strengths of its assets. And one of the economists who were involved in that report considered geospatial to be as important as a general purpose technology. General purpose technologies like water, like electricity. And for an economist to be considering the contribution that geospatial technology, geospatial data can make to the running of a country in that kind of context is really important and something which I think we've got to continue to build on. Bill Clinton came to power way back in the 1980s and it had three sort of big campaign principles. And he drilled into his campaign team three really important things that they should stand behind. First up, it's change. Change, change, change. Things have got to be different. It's not going to be more of the same. There's also an aspect of, well, it's the economy stupid, was his line, but I think we can almost paraphrase it in today to, is digital stupid? And for an organisation like ourselves and an industry like our own, I think there's some really strong parallels that come out of that time. Number one, things have changed. And the geospatial industry at times has been known for not changing rapidly enough. And in a world where the technology changes, the opportunities which are being presented to us are moving so quickly, it's important that as an industry, we're embracing that change and moving at some pace. It's important to realise in doing so, we've got to think in a way that we haven't traditionally thought before. We've got to think digitally in everything we do. Now that doesn't mean that it means everything's computerised. We're trying to embrace digital technologies where we're talking about a future world where we're looking at artificial intelligence, we're thinking about robotics, everything on cloud, the representation of space in a digital environment and using terms like digital twin rather than mapping or geospatial technologies. We're thinking about digital first. And of course, at the same time as doing all of that, go back to the previous slides that I started with, we have a really well-developed economy. People rely on the products, the services, the technologies that we use today, so we can't forget about those parts of society and recognise that they don't move at the same pace. So on one level, the geospatial industry is caught between two things. Servicing today's market, servicing today's applications, continuing to do that, but very, very rapidly looking to the future and trying to make sure that it's fit to serve the world that's coming around the corner. Data, data everywhere. We're now dealing in a, I mean, it's almost, it was easier 2 years ago to use a slide like this. Today, I mean, big data is just part of our everyday existence. We're dealing with just volumes of data that seem to get larger and larger every day. And at the same time, we're trying to work out where the value in that data is. Now, for the geospatial industry, I think we traditionally sat on perhaps on the left-hand side of of this diagram, where we could sit there and say there is enormous value in geospatial data. That was very helpful. The huge explosion in other data sets, some of that is geospatial, some of it is not. The ability to use location to uniquely unlock the value in other people's data is where we're trying to find our space today, I think. And recognizing that that means that we need to work very differently. We're working collaboratively, we're adding value to other people's data. It's not something that we can do our own. Doing geospatial data, doing geospatial information, worrying about geospatial infrastructure is very much now a team sport. In their industry, we use phrases like everything happens somewhere, and we have been doing for a long time. I don't think that that phrase today matters any less than it ever did. I think it's still a fundamental component about getting over the value of what we all offer. It is true to recognise that everything happens somewhere. I think for an organisation, again, like our own, we spent 225 years trying to simplify the natural complexity of the real world. We've been trying to distill what is a fundamentally complex world outside and to distill it down originally into sort of map form, more recently into data form, but to help describe that world in a relatively simple way. I think today, the opportunity is to unleash a whole load of new potential into that data set. We no longer have that same constraint. And when we start talking languages about digital twins and so on, the opportunity to abstract the real world and actually model it pretty much in the same existence as it appears outside the window just now is a real paradigm that we've not had the opportunity to before. Data is no longer something which we serve through data sets. We expect them to consume it as part of a platform. And I think when we talk about data being delivered as a platform, it's encouraging us to think not about the outputs, not about the mechanism simply to serve data, but about the outcomes that we're trying to meet. So, you know, what questions do you want to ask of the data that's being delivered? Who is involved in determining the data that's required to answer that? And are we delivering that in the right way as part of a service? The fourth industrial revolution, I think, presents an opportunity for us to add value in a way that perhaps we weren't through the previous revolution. So whether it was a military revolution, an industrial revolution, computerization in the past, the digital revolution that's being often attributed back to the fourth industrial revolution is key for us going forward. Some fascinating statistics that Lord Prior made when he opened welcomed land registry into geovation that I'll talk about later on was that by 2030 as many as 18 million jobs in today's society may no longer exist. I mean, when you start looking whether 18 million is the right number or not, huge numbers associated with today's job market that automation, machine intervention, robotics would start to remove from today's society. 65% of tomorrow's workforce, the workforce to be involved in digital society, you know, are still at school today. We often talk about the ease by which children in education today are using technology and how much we perhaps still struggle with that. But to go beyond the whole phrase of digital native, to just come up in a digital society where your expectation is one of being able to use digital technology in a way we perhaps haven't, is something that's absolutely paramount. Britain today is embracing digital technologies. It's positioning itself to be a leader globally, post-Brexit, on an international stage with digital technologies. And a lot of the applications I'm going to share with you later on are an example of where they're locking geospatial into that thinking. So I'm going to do two things this afternoon, I hope, and just over the next half hour or so, which is to share with you a number of case studies where we've been involved domestically here in Great Britain on an innovation front. Projects that have been funded by Innovate UK have come out of the government's catapult funds and walk through some of those and perhaps explain why it is that Ordnance Survey sees fit to be involved in technology such as 5G communications, be involved in the world that's developing around us in terms of connected autonomous vehicles. And I'll also talk a little bit about how important it is to then support the marketplace. So it's on one level, it's fine to be involved technologically, innovating, but we'll also talk a little bit about the support we're doing for that. So I think it's really interesting to reflect on the demand for content and geospatial content changing. So today we're working in a real-time environment. We're talking about a real world, not the abstract world that perhaps we traditionally have been involved in. Machine-to-machine communications are very real. So when we're talking about a world of connected, connected devices, connected things, a world of autonomous machines, if not autonomous things, if you like, and phenomenal volumes of data coming at us at all levels. And that's something which traditionally an organisation like Open would have been interested in and would have provided the foundation against on which some of that data could be overlaid, viewed or otherwise. Today I think we have to be part of that world. Our data, the data that we create and the data that many others perhaps in this room create needs to be part of that environment. In terms of outcomes that we're talking about, some of the needs to address urban mobility and to think about the way in which the city environment is managing and utilising its energy networks, and to think about the business models that are beginning to emerge, particularly around some of the bigger cities, there are some big problems for which geospatial can contribute. And if you haven't looked at some of the major government strategies at the moment, the 25-year natural capital plan, and the industrial strategy, which is coming out of Department Bays, and the long-term programme around digital strategy, they all have data written right across them, and geospatial is relevant to all of those. So we can start to see a whole new generation of outcomes for national geospatial assets. So whether a whole range of different government services, the sorts of technologies which government are investing heavily in and stimulating within the economy, is driving the right-hand side the need for a very different approach to national mapping. And most recently, at the end of last year, some very significant announcements in the House of Commons. The Chancellor used geospatial, I suspect, for the first time within the Chamber, in the form of announcing the creation of Geospatial Commission to coordinate government's involvement in geospatial activities and to make sure that the government is supporting the development of geospatial infrastructure comprehensively across Great Britain. I think, you know, it's a really significant intervention, if you like, that government has chosen to make, and a very welcome one. So initially, Geospatial Commission is looking to lock in the activities of six key agencies that have been very involved in developing geospatial infrastructure for a number of years. But over the next few years, we'd absolutely envisage many other organisations coming together. Up to 70 different government agencies have been noted as containing geospatial assets one way or another, to bring those together to make sure that together they're being used to unlock value across the UK economy is a really important thing. And of course, this isn't just a government initiative, it can't be. And so from our perspective, you know, we absolutely see the connection reaching out to ultimately the end citizen, other businesses, other organisations, to contribute to the development of a next generation geospatial infrastructure in Great Britain. Now, I started off by saying you don't live in an isolated part of the world on your own anymore, and it's absolutely true to recognise that Britain is an active part of global development. And I think we've tackled that in two ways in Ordnance Survey. So for the last few years, we've started to reach out beyond Britain and start to offer services internationally around the world. And there's a number of reasons for doing that. I think, quite aside from the model in which we operate and our shareholders' encouragement to develop revenues through offering our expertise from the UK, the insight and the expertise that we gather from what other nations are doing is paramount. So bringing that knowledge, bringing that experience from international development back from other parts of the world into the UK is really benefiting our own experience and where we focus our efforts. Some really interesting experiences I came from. I'm not going to read through all of those, you can do it yourself, but you know, I think it's interesting in that there is no one single ingredient for what makes a super national data infrastructure based around geospatial activities. Everyone has their own priorities. I mean, it goes without saying that those activities tend to be based around either economic, environmental, social type drivers, but every government has their own focus at any point in time. And the need to have a flexible infrastructure that can work across those and meet those is absolutely key. part of that is stimulated by UNGGIM, and I'll talk a little about that in a second, and our involvement in it. But a lot of it is focused on the infrastructure that needs to be built to serve the priorities of that nation at any point in time. So we're seeing an enormous investment in technology infrastructure, data being part of that, but you see huge differences around the world, whether you're working in the developed nations, where they're still focusing on land tenure, where they're still focusing on land use, land cover type applications, right through to Singapore, highly developed city environment, and through to Dubai, where in the main areas around Dubai, happiness and the injection of social purpose is right at the core of much of their infrastructure planning. UNGGIM is a really important initiative for which almost all member states around the world have embraced, and to ensure that across all governments across the world coming together to ensure that a global infrastructure of well-curated, highly developed, managed geospatial infrastructure is something which is recognised at a UN level. I think that's in the last couple of years to involve the private sector within that initiative has been a super development to recognise that this isn't something which nation states can do on their own, but to bring private sector enterprise into the UN environment has been a significant development. And we're now starting to see not just the concept of having international joined up government UN government policy coming together, but to start to put programmes of work in place where we can have funded activities to ensure that the geospatial capacity at a global level is developed. It's also, I think, been interesting for us domestically in Britain to recognise the need for collaborations across what you would in first look say would be obvious domains that haven't always been connected together. So deep integration between geospatial and statistics, and statistics and mapping, deep integration with Earth observation, deep integration with land administration are activities which we kind of all know are important to link together that haven't been so well developed in the past. And I think our own developments here domestically over the next 12 months or so will really start to demonstrate that. The Sustainable Development Goals that the UN published are absolutely underpinned by geospatial. 17 goals, 169 targets, 232 global indicators, a huge number of which are implicitly, if not explicitly, underpinned by geospatial. And the work of UNGGIM to really bring those out and make that apparent, both at an international level, at UN level, but then back domestically, has been a major success of the working groups there. Here in the UK, bringing some of that learning back, we've been doing a lot of work both with the Office of National Statistics and NRS to make sure that the Geospatial Agency and the Statistical Agencies are working very closely together. We've been able to demonstrate the importance of land use change as Britain is developing very significantly to be able to determine at an individual polygon level how the land cover, land use is changing and present that as part of annual statistics. It's been something we've been running geospatially now for around 5 years. And then getting down to areas where we've never really been able to publish at levels below super output areas, lower super output areas, being able to use what we would regard as being topographic, network-based, address-level type geospatial data and link that back to some of the more traditional statistical reportings that started to release some really interesting statistics. So this example, starting to look at the impact of introducing new metro link stops on the services populations that we service to that as part of the rollout of strategic plan in Manchester, has made some very different decisions about where new railway stops or tram stops, in essence, are placed. So starting to sort of build out statistics, geospatial, and linking through to regional planning. Here in Britain is starting to change. We've also started to see a big drive to use Earth observation differently. I'll talk a little bit about that now, I guess. So I think for us, we've never really been a big consumer of Earth observation technologies. Earth observation was always slightly separate. Very big in terms of remote sensing. An airborne remote sensing technology housed in Ordnance Survey. replacing photogrammetry, but not really satellite Earth observation as has developed. And I think that is now changing. It's changed quite dramatically in the last couple of years with the advent of the amount of data that's available, and moving faster and faster towards multiple expressions of the globe every few days. The amount of change data that comes from that is really, really significant. And we're talking about an industry today that simply could not have existed even 10 years ago. I mean, it's a really significant change. Whether it's the platforms, the technology, and the sensors that they put, and just the sheer volume of data, even today we're struggling to deal with that volume of data. So, you know, it's certainly something which is going to be significant over the next few years. For ourselves in OS, I think it's interesting in that there's undoubtedly production opportunities for us to look at in terms of Earth observation. We can do our core day job better than we've ever been able to do before. And at the very least, that can just be improving our ability to manage where change is happening. So if we may not be able to map from space, but we can certainly find out where things are changing from space and do that far more frequently than we've ever been able to do it before. And it's a huge technological opportunity, if not technological challenge for us. We're ever looking to be able to develop new content within that, and today we're challenged, I guess, most explicitly by the need to capture where things are happening and extract that from the data. So a lot of our efforts in the next few years will be continuing to work on the automatic extraction of features from satellite data and really kind of try and make that next jump to remove our traditional flow lines in that regard. I think for GB it's kind of interesting in that as we kind of have a slight obsession with optical sensors, Earth observation has always been a real challenge here in Great Britain, something to do with cloud that makes it a little bit more challenging than perhaps in other parts of the world. But I think we can start to recognise that as long as we're not obsessed with complete coverage all of the time from the same scene, there's an enormous amount of redundancy in today's data that allows us to go over that. And to be able to take actionable insight from that data is something which is really important. I think where we think we can offer something quite unique in the UK from other developing nations probably, is to recognise that we have two things. We have an enormous opportunity to use huge volumes of satellite data, but we can reference that data back to phenomenally good real-world data. So we have very, very good real-world object data out in the street. We have very, very good mapping and geospatial data as we traditionally know it. The level of change data that can be brought in from Earth observation, the attribution that came with it, the conflation of those two things together presents a really significant opportunity for us in the UK. And over the last probably only 18 months or so, there's some really exciting cross-government initiatives that are beginning to happen here in the UK, some of which are very present here in Scotland. So about 18 months ago, UK government brought together a group of agencies, UK GEOS, to look at the better use of Earth observation across government. We've been doing a number of programmes of work in that, not least looking at dynamic coastal mapping here in Scotland and coastal change. Particularly golf courses in the northeast of Scotland, in case anyone missed those. Perhaps quite a lot of American interest in that at the moment. Certainly a lot of areas of how do we use environmentally Earth observation more powerfully, so DEFRA are looking at some of that. And being a very active part of Global Earth Observation, GEO, which is a UN-linked programme, to ensure that the Earth observation activities around the world are coordinated for global benefit. However, there's nothing better than being disruptive in life, and we're trying to do exactly that. And over the last 2 years, within OS, we've been running a smart practice, which has been interesting. This is the bit where the slides start to take a mind of their own from earlier on. Hold on just a minute. Stop them progressing, that would be good, wouldn't it? So that way. So, we started looking at smart as an overall label for the disruptive things that were happening within technologically smart things that were happening in and around digital Britain, and trying to make sure that geospatial activities were locked onto those. We're trying to make sure that we were helping in the economy that was being built to be differentiated, if you like, by recognising that everything is connected. I must have to stop doing that. I have to talk quicker. So there's a number of things within that that I'll let it go. We'll come back to look at in case study form. So I think there's an interesting thing in terms of enabling connectivity. So yes, there are absolutely technical things that will happen, and we'll talk about 5G, connected autonomous vehicles, and a couple of others within that. I think with all these things, there's a social purpose behind some of this as well. So I think we're not going to the point right here where we're about to launch some new exciting product at the end of this. This is saying to a couple of folk at the start that being involved in some of these things, there is much proving that both geospatial is relevant. We have capacity to explore some of these new developments and prove the role of geospatial within it. That doesn't necessarily mean immediately that your National Mapping Agency should be the body to do that, but it's certainly true and useful to prove that, prove the roles within it. Our own government, as with many around the globe, have been a real commitment to invest in 5G communications, 5G networks. And that places a real challenge on our environments to support that. The technical nature of 5G signal propagation is such that it requires a lot more detailed planning than has ever been required for 3 or 4G communications. High frequency signals are very, very sensitive to the environment around it. It relies very explicitly on line of sight, so from a sensor on the post there, only the areas of green, if you like, in really simple terms, are able to see that. It's relying on line of sight. So being able to have real integrity about the data at street level, the advent of reflective surfaces, vegetation on trees, street furniture, and a whole degree of microgeography of light in the street environment has become really, really important. It's not just the availability of data to describe that, but also the recognition that red in this image is good. If you have two receivers here, imagine the analogy of throwing a stone in the in the water and seeing the ripples come out. Waves will cancel themselves out. And so the degree by which geospatial data is required at a real micro level to prove the environment and to control the environment for both planning and subsequent operation of a 5G network is really rather essential. Now, there's a school of thought that says because of that level of complexity, it's highly unlikely that we're going to get down to the level of planning in that regard. But today, the need to design and plan the environments in which we want 5G technology to be available to us is going to require a level of mapping, a level of data, a level of understanding like we've not had before. So I think there's a real focus today for ourselves to understand, well, how would we provide an infrastructure of micro-scale geography that we've never been able to do before, and over what environments would we seek to do that? Going the wrong way now. We are not about to build a connected autonomous vehicle of our own. However, we do have a concern, and I think most developed nations begin to share the same concern, that the data exchange between vehicles and from vehicle to infrastructure is becoming a real challenge. Imagine the moment 10 years from now where we have 55 manufacturers of autonomous vehicles on our road. They're all self-sensing. They know where they're going individually. But they don't talk to one another, and becomes a real challenge. So we started to work, and earlier this week there was an announcement of our involvement in a project called eCAVE, which is looking at a range of different technologies, standards, environments, whereby based on an awareness of where a vehicle is, to share information between vehicles and from vehicle back to central infrastructure. I think there's a range of paradigms around knowing where the car is, but if the car is experiencing some environmental conditions that it then wants to share with anything that's coming behind it, through what infrastructure and through which data exchange platforms is that information shared? And at the same time, does the city want to control those vehicles? So we're trying to solve transportation problems, congestion problems, how does the city to start to move vehicles from one part of an infrastructure to another and start to engage intelligently with those vehicles? So I think we're interested in the concept of data exchange. And if you go back far enough to the principles almost of a national geospatial infrastructure and the sorts of data standards that are sitting behind that, I think it's a real thing for ourselves as an organisation in terms of laying out that data infrastructure and planning, not just to be able to provide the data, but the underlying framework through which data is exchanged. Which really takes us into the same environment in a city. Rather than sort of between, so this is obviously a static environment. We've been working in the city of Manchester for the last 3 years now in a programme called CityVerve, which was an Innovate UK IoT demonstrator project, the legacy of which now is a data exchange environment. Many of the original partners staying in the city to use location as that common denominator through which information about the city environment is changed. And I think the use cases are really interesting within this. So if we just take something like transport infrastructure planning and use the example that it's not so much about the outputs, the data sets, but the outcomes, the number of different actors, if you like, who are interested in aspects of transport infrastructure planning, of course that could be any use case, are quite telling. So you have everything from a head teacher increasingly worried about the pollution environment around that school, through to individuals who may be suffering from respiratory challenges, city administrators who are interested about the planning of the transport infrastructure to serve the citizens within that. They are not interested in managing large volumes of data. I think within Edinburgh University, if I'm right, there's a big programme to train data scientists across the university. There is still a real challenge with data scientists today spending the majority of their time gathering the data they need rather than being provisioned with the data in the first place in the right way. So I think there's a real emphasis on us all as data providers to ensure that we're managing data in a way which is immediately accessible. We're thinking about data as much in a framework sense as we are about a data set to solve problems. And the final example in this really is almost a data exchange environment for the subsurface. We've been working very closely with Future Cities Catapult and BGS, the Geological Survey, for the last few years to really start to think about a data exchange environment for the subsurface. So there's a whole range of information that's just below the surface. Some cities with legacy environments more so than others. But when you're trying to work in a planning environment to know what's below the surface is much above the surface and how those two come together are super important. So a whole range of data infrastructure, data standards, data framework projects that are being developed perhaps now more so than they were a few years ago. So really over the next few years, there's some really important projects that we're working on. Some of you may have read earlier in January, the National Infrastructure Commission launched a very major report around data infrastructure, setting out their vision for a national digital twin of Great Britain. And such a thing is just not possible without a strong geospatial environment sitting behind it. So locking ourselves into, if you like, the master map of Britain, really being focused on the relationship with the national digital twin that will emerge over the next 10 years, it will become a significant focus for ourselves. We're increasingly concerned with facilitating other people's data. I think those of you who have been involved with us over a number of years will have known that we tend to create our own data. To recognise the role in working with others, whether that's others helping us keep our data more current, whether that's our data just acting as a framework for others is something which means that we have to think quite differently from the way we've traditionally thought about the role of national geospatial infrastructure. It is absolutely true that we'll capture new data. Give you some examples this afternoon about a generation where there'll be a demand for microgeographies, much more sort of a much higher level of detail than we've ever captured in the past, and some of the technologies that are available for us to do that. I think it's at the core of that. When we originally launched Massima 20 odd years ago now, there was almost the concept of it being launched under the brand of Digital National Framework. And the principle of Digital National Framework appears to be coming ever more to the top of that surface, and the role of a national agency to provide that underpinning framework that can facilitate data exchange and allow others to contribute and query is really important within that. So really just finally, it's really important to, and I think we're really seeing it in all of the engagements that we've had with government and the market in the last few years, is that in many cases you can make data as available as you like, but it still doesn't become particularly accessible. And I think it's a real challenge for the geospatial industry to continue to focus on developing the ease for users to engage with the data, the products and services that we collectively create. It's a number of years ago now since we launched Geovation, which was a program with an Ordnance Survey initially to stimulate use of data in an agnostic fashion, not necessarily Ordnance Survey data, not necessarily using GIS as we perhaps traditionally knew it, but to make sure that we were helping entrepreneurs, developers, new generations of users to access and use geospatial data, and recognising that they worked in very different ways. It was a combination, if you like, of both innovation but also entrepreneurship. So we were looking to invest in a program whereby we could support people to use our data and use others' data in the way in which they hadn't before, but towards a real commercial purpose. So we were looking for businesses to be created, and we were looking to support organisations to develop ideas and to bring that to market through a number of different ways, through different vehicles. So, as of the end of last year, we were a couple of years through Geovation programme. The businesses that we helped support had raised just over £10 million in further rounds of funding. The businesses themselves have created almost 100 jobs. Within the Geovation community, there's 1,000 members, many of whom wouldn't be at events like this if you characterise yourself as being part of the more traditional geospatial industry. We had 40 company members as well as 12 major funding partners. And there were three major parts to the programme of the community which were so important to do at the same time. So the hub in London is something of which we're really proud. It's an incubator space. It brings together people. I mean, Alex, who runs it for us, says it's more than just about coffee, but you've got to provide great coffee. But it allows you the space to come as individuals, to collaborate with other SMEs who are in that space and corporate innovators who are around there. It's a really important centre that we've started to now reach out across the rest of Britain. So it was a centre in Clerkenwell in London. We're having conversations in Scotland as to how we do something similar. Another city environments in Bristol, we've been able to facilitate different member sharing agreements so that the Geovation community can be accessed more regionally across Britain. I think our learning in that, as well as the free coffee, has been accessed to developers, experts, and subject matter experts within those environments has really lend itself to both expand the way in which geospatial data is being used, but for also us to learn more about that community. We've been using it to seek challenges in the market, a combination of, if you like, social purpose challenges to challenge society to use geospatial data more effectively to solve problems in their neighbourhood, in their city environment, and to engage with that, but equally to really address some of the governmental challenges of the day and to try and bring a wider community of people into to helping solve some of those challenges. So that's, the challenges tend to run on hackathons, come along for the weekend, refine your ideas, the winning ideas then receive some seed funding from ourselves to build that out and professionalise and industrialise the project over a 6-month period. And then the final part of it is the programme where we're investing in small amounts, relatively small amounts of seed funding. We provide businesses with a home in the form of the hub, take a number of businesses through a year. So we're taking somewhere up to about 15 companies a year through the programme. They receive about £20,000 worth of grant funding, which when you're starting a brand new business gives you a great degree of security to start, access the developers, access the software, and a real environment of entrepreneurialism and coaching to help some businesses come through. So the last couple of years, we've launched, well, at least we can't say we've launched them, they've launched themselves, but we've supported a number of businesses coming through, and Flock, who are providing services into the insurance sector for flying drones, and Signalbox, who are looking at real-time passenger information on train systems. So, you know, part of the problem we all have on our phones today is the difficulty of exactly how close am I to the train that's about to depart. When I get into the station environment, which platform am I going to, etc. Signalbox are looking at really, I guess, bringing the time environment into the station environment. Land planning for farmers and environmental planners. The other example is Pinepix, which is a lovely example of being able to link archive imagery, historical data into sort of modern environment. Urban intelligence, which bring a whole range of different city data available for end users to be able to interrogate their city environment. And Refill, which was on some of the on the news this week, where you know we walk around with disposable plastic wherever we go. Wouldn't it be nice if you were able to go into a registered shop and fill up your bottle? But where do I go to do that? So an opportunity to do some of that. So really, that was a kind of canter through a kind of a range of things this afternoon, I guess, for things that are impacting on us as a business and an organisation within government. Hopefully giving you an insight into some of the challenges and opportunities that national mapping are being faced with today. I didn't show you a whole lot of maps. That may or may not have been a huge surprise. To us these days, we talk about data and technology far more than we ever talk about mapping. And really looking at how we ensure that we're developing the right infrastructure, the right data frameworks to support what we envisage being a really important decade ahead for geospatial data and services. Now, I don't know whether it's customary at points within this, but given my previous association with AGI, I'm going to take the opportunity with an audience to talk about how you get involved. So I think it's really important. So today is a part sponsored event through AGI. AGI is the national body that supports the geospatial industry in the UK. It's an organisation that's run by members, for its members, and here in Scotland there is a really strong national group that you should be part of if you are not today. The students in the room who are here today, there's a really attractive free student membership of AGI. It's a fantastic way to enter into the professional marketplace here in Great Britain. So if you're not sure, then I know Bruce would only be too happy to talk to you about the benefits of being part of AGI Scotland and the AGI community. And if you haven't already, the AGI Scotland annual event takes place at the end of February in Glasgow this year, free for students to attend. Be delighted to see as many of you there as you can, and it takes very little time to join up and participate within that. So if you're not already part of the AGI community, I really encourage you to do that. And with that, I'll stop there and be happy to take any questions. Or not, if I'm standing between you and geodrinks.
Still a lot of time. Questions?
You didn't mention anything about augmented reality.
I didn't.
And you didn't mention anything about 3D. What I mean by 3D is true 3D. So you talked about microgeography, which I think is very interesting, but you didn't talk about the architectural. In other words, can we connect this room into the geography outside? And that's where a lot of people are arguing is the next big challenge in geospatial is enabling us to move between architectural kind of interior spaces and into the outside world. There's some amazing developments and technologies in that field. And I wondered whether OS... at the moment, your 3D models are a simple manifold, 2.5D pretty simplistic. Where's that all going? Are you going to embed 3D within your models to that fundamental level, to true topological 3D, or are you going to kind of keep the architectural stuff away and start at the doorstep of the door to the outside world? How are you going to marry those two worlds together?
Great question, William, isn't it? And we could have a whole thesis on that.
He did pay me to answer.
No, I don't. And it's quite challenging to answer, I think. I mean, you literally could. We could spend 60 minutes talking about it. And I think so. You started off with almost the kind of AR VR type moment of developments. And I think I wish I'd had Layla Gordon, one of our research clients. I wish I had some of her slides this afternoon. So she's been doing some really amazing, cool things. So I can't connect it up. So within OS Maps, even sort of a consumer mapping application that we have for iPhone. And within that environment, last year we put a bit of a change in that you can hold your phone up now, standing on top of the hill, and just sort of spin around at a very, I'm now at the macro level of 3 foot, spinning around, and you can see what's in front of you. It's kind of beginning to connect on this. We've done this lately, we've been doing some really interesting things within an airport environment. And so I'm in the airport environment, I've got my phone in front of me. And how do I view the digital environment of that airport through a phone environment when you've got the real world in front of you? So I can start to see where my bags are going to come out by holding up, and you can start to see the information about the environment coming onto into sort of almost a photorealistic environment around you. I don't think at this point in time we have the capacity to embed 3D along the levels that you were talking about there. I think the growth of a digital twin within Britain is really interesting, and you cannot have a digital twin that's not fundamentally 3D in every aspect of what it's considering, both indoor and outdoor, above ground and below ground. And those different domains are going to be really challenging for us all to manage with. I think the data is one side, the visualisation and the way in which you consume that is a whole different side of it. And so I think even if we were able to develop the data, which we undoubtedly will do, it will be in conjunction with a whole range of visualization technologies to be able to view it, and a whole range of different technologies to query across the different domains that just aren't there today. So I think it's a great question to come back and talk about it with some of the 3D guys another day, I think, because it's something which will move very quickly. I can't remember the first part of your question.
No, that was it. That was my area. It's about this question about the architectural. Because that we're gravitating, aren't we? You know, City GML was looking at trying to make those connections between the finite scale, interior space, and the external space. But that's still a gap. It's quite a huge gap.
Huge gap.
Right. That was interesting. But as someone who isn't in academia anymore, it has to pay for data. That's obviously a challenge for some people, individuals and companies. I don't know what you can tell us about the Geospatial Commission and what might happen.
Well, there you go. Well done for being the second person. not a lot. So last year, there were two announcements I mean, I clearly left out. So there were two announcements that the Chancellor made towards the end of last year, wasn't there? So there was one that said, we'll create a Geospatial Commission. The other one, where the government was seeking to make a commitment to look at opening up what we call MasterMap, so MasterMap range of products around there, to small businesses under an open government license while protecting the strategic strengths for them. So, not that effective. And there's a lot in there, isn't there? So, I think we've been doing a lot in the last few years to kind of try and work out ways to enable easier access into data. So, so we've got a number of licensing environments where folk can take free-to-use licenses for a period of time and raise things around it. Our business model today is one where commercial income contributes significantly towards the delivery of our public tasks. And to have a completely open data environment around that has just been a real challenge for us. We're a big open data publisher, and today, as most people know, how far into MasterMap it goes and for how many users is something which government is obviously going to work very closely on over the next 6 months. But you know, today we're expecting, following the budget announcement, to support opening MasterMap to small businesses. Direction of travel around.
How do you define small businesses?
comprehensive map of the world in which you cite the countries which you're cooperating in terms of. There was a big blank over North America. It's a prompt thought in my mind. You never mentioned Google Maps, which is a great example of a matter. And you were talking about matter.
Did you bring this chap with you? Several times, I think I was kind of intimating that, you know, it's no longer something. You don't have a national map, you should just have isolation from anything else. And I think, you know, open data today has been a great thing already. So I think it's one of our probably, I mean, it doesn't matter so much because, you know, you do these things, but, you know, you see your own data replicated in all manner of different global platforms, wherever that provider is. You mentioned Google, but others are available, I believe. But, you know, it's, I think, you know, domestic environments don't operate independently from international players, and I think within the US, you know, Google based in the US, Apple based in the US, Mapbox based in the US, but, you know, they're all serving different domains throughout the globe, and US, Canada have their own national mapping programs addressing national need. So I think, you know, today we coexist in a world. I think we still work hard to maintain national differentiation, but at the same time recognising that there are global platforms who are opening up all manner of economic value for us to use data very easily in our pockets and beyond. But I think for us, you know, I think it's increasingly important. I mean, part of reference to standards, reference to data infrastructure and underpinning frameworks, I think is a focus for domestic, national, geospatial agencies. It's a real need to think about the needs of its own national government and to facilitate that level of data exchange across a number of platforms, and that's not really something that we would see the global platform providers offering in the same way.
I'm fascinated by this idea of the digital twin, and certainly the collaboration between the various government agencies towards building, you know, a digital twin of the UK is really exciting. But, you know, much of our expertise, certainly of Ordnance Survey, is very much involved with mapping things you can either walk into or trip over. And if you build a digital twin of that, it's a ghost town because you're missing the people.
Yeah.
And where do the people fit in? Where does that information about people at a level perhaps beyond, you know, the statistical output area, where does that fit within that worldview of the digital twin?
A digital twin is a great thing, isn't it? So, I mean, a digital twin has to serve as almost any use case that you want to do, and therefore everyone's view of that world is different. Mm. So I think the risk is that we immediately default to thinking a digital twin is a digital version of a real world digital twin, without taking into account all the other aspects of it. And you mentioned people as being a major part of that. I mean, today the telephone, mobile phone operators have a great view of things that are moving through that environment. Air quality is a major part of that environment. And it's not something it's not something that Ordnance Survey builds on its own. Mm. So I think we can provide a lot of that common underpinning framework to it. And common glue within it. Geography is probably underpinning the principle by which everything can be referenced in a way, but there's a lot of space to be filled in. And it won't be us that do that filling. So right now, the National Infrastructure Commission, we're advocating that the Centre for Digital Build Britain, or the organisation tasked with taking that forward, Ordnance Survey, part of that grouping, but others will have to be involved in that too. It's not venture on our own.
Very recently, SpaceX is about to launch. If you look at launch vehicles into space, they are now entirely privatized. And you mentioned right at the very beginning projects like iSpy, iSpy, and CubeX, and all sorts of cheap and cheerful things just being sort of splashed into the world with huge ambitions from private companies that have completely made NASA effectively sort of redundant in terms of payload delivery into space. And I just wonder about the analogy in terms of the role of the private world and social media in the way in which we collect and map. And some countries are sort of giving up on their national mapping agencies. They're just lobbing their data into OpenStreetMap and saying, yeah, okay, you guys can populate all of this stuff. I think there's a very, very interesting dynamic there as to how much longer you can sustain an argument that says, look, we deliver something of unique quality that has a quality stamp on it, a kite mark. But there's a premium for that kite mark. And so often I hear of organizations and people that are saying, yeah, okay, OSM, Google Maps, hasn't got a kite mark on it, but, you know, I'll just go with that. It'll do for most of what I need.
So I remain fairly relaxed in that regard. So
sure.
I don't recognize the concern the same. And I think on one level, it's absolutely true that we have to differentiate ourselves. And I think if we're going to continue producing mapping and say that the preserve of organ surveys is for as long as we can create a large-scale map, no one else can do that, I think that's some years behind us now.
Yeah.
So I think the role of any national organisation in providing security of supply, authoritative data, so that, and when I say authoritative, that's not something that OS can do on its own, or any national mapping agency can do on its own, but the ability to bring together governmental data. So I said earlier on, about 70 different agencies within government creating, publishing, managing geospatial data. It's quite difficult to get your head around where all those agencies are and how they come together. So I think the opportunity to make sure that that data set is coming together, that it's giving the ability to interact with some of those other players. I think there's opportunities from space for us to use that data more effectively than we can at present. But I don't recognise the assertion that geospatial at a national domain becomes any less secure, if you like, going forward. And it's certainly not something the UK government has concluded after two reviews in the last 2 years. So, yeah, both through a general review in 2016 and then most latterly through the digital land review last year, you know, government strongly coming out, I think, looked internationally and hard at both the economic footprint and the technology opportunities and saying, actually, you know, the principle of national mapping has never been more important. And it is something that the government should continue to ensure is undertaken as a government organisation. It's not something that can be left out.
Maybe the government will have to pay the bill for that.
Well, government pays a big price today, remember. So, you know, government funds a lot of activity from Ordnance Survey today. Around about half of Ordnance Survey's income still comes from the public sector. So government, through public sector contracts, whether it's through Scottish Government or whether it's through Whitehall or Wales, I mean, still significant public sector contracts between Ordnance Survey and government.
But if you make it open source, you will undermine your revenue from the private sector. And so therefore the government will have to step in to make the difference.
Well, at that point it becomes a business model conversation, a funding model conversation.
Or you do less. Which is the American model.
Yeah.
And I think these are exactly the conversations that you would expect to come up with a Geospatial Commission. And one of the reasons why a Geospatial Commission is so important going forward is that it provides, you know, that central voice as to how we develop geospatial infrastructure in Britain over the next few years.
There you have it. Right, well, I think we'll let David off the hook there just one final thing. Unless you've got any other big questions. Let's retire shortly to geodrinks. All welcome. There may be some stock still at the back there, but we will generally sort of tidy up. The new caterers might take our bottles away, so we can sort of mingle a bit, but then we'll head over to TV at Library Bar for our tea drinks, so all welcome to that. Next talk is the 16th of February, where we move from sort of blue space and space itself to green space using some of the OS products and data, so there's a continuation there. So that just remains. I'd like to thank you all for coming. Frontiers folks, stick your name on the sheet and I'll tell someone you came. And therefore, just say thank you very much once again to David for bringing this talk. Thank you.